he said, she said, or technically speaking and simply put.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Well, my dear, it's another beautiful day here in paradise. The sun is up. The sunrise this morning was just fabulous. Big, gigantic, I don't know, a reddish hue all around the clouds. Right to the left of Diamond Head, our vantage point from our apartment, and it's just unbelievable. I just love the sun rises and the sun sets. That's the beauty of Hawaii.
You got that right. And I don't know what's wrong with our camera, but we're taking pictures of sunsets and sunrises, but we don't seem to get the sunrise or the sunset in the picture for some reason. So I think you're going to have to buy me a new camera, Corey.
It's actually knowing how to use the technology. You have to change the setting.
Right.
So anyway, things are going very, very well here, and we're still really enjoying the spirit of aloha, and we're getting mellowed out and feeling really good about life and getting in touch with our spirit and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think that the Hawaiian lifestyle does something to you inside and out. And one thing's for sure, the heat kind of pushes you down to the ground and everything kind of slows down. So it gives you a different perspective.
I don't think it has anything to do with Hawaii, Corey. I think it's age. You're getting older, old man.
Yes, and I'm embracing my age. Age is something, chronologically speaking, that we have absolutely no control over, unless we want to bring an end to our age. But let's talk about living. And now that we're on that topic, what's cooking?
What's cooking? Well, chicken piccata. Now, I have, years ago, made veal piccata. Sorry to say that. That's almost a bad word sometimes. But chicken piccata, which is very, very nice. It's lemony and buttery with capers. It's absolutely scrumptious. So if you're looking for a new recipe to make chicken with, here's one, and here's the way you go. So what I do is I get some chicken breast, the best chicken that you can find, and I cut the chicken breast in halves horizontally. So it's like butterflying them so that they're thin sliced. And then in a Ziploc bag, I would add some flour, which of course we know would be whole wheat, spelt, or kamut flour, maybe a third of a cup, something like that. I add garlic powder to my chicken piccata. Now, the chicken piccata and veal piccata do not ask in other recipes for garlic, but I'm Sicilian and I like me garlic. And then I add a little bit of sea salt and crushed pepper. Then what I do is I drench them, I coat them, I shake them up in the Ziploc bag so they're nice and well coated. Then I put them on a plate. And then what I do is I heat some olive oil into a large skillet on a medium heat. I add the chicken pieces to the skillet so they lightly brown on each side. Let's say about approximately 3 minutes. You don't want to overcook it now. Then what I'll do is I'll remove the chicken from the pan and then I reserve it to a plate. And then in the pan, which the olive oil is in, I add a little bit of water, or if you want to get a little decadent, you can add some dry white wine. And then you want to add juice of freshly squeezed lemon. A couple of lemons would be great, and maybe a tablespoon of butter, and stir it all around, whisk it all around, bring it to a boil. Then what I do is I add capers to this. C-A-P-E-R-S, capers. You can find them in a little jar next to the pickle section. You want to make sure that you wash off the brine so that they're not too salty. And then I reduce the heat, and I use a spatula to scrape up all the little brown bits, and it's going to thicken because of the flour that you put into it. So about 2 minutes. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to add the chicken pieces, again, just to reheat them up for about 2 minutes, and you've got this nice, thick, buttery, lemony sauce. And then what I would do is I'd sprinkle over some fresh parsley. That's also optional. And it's just so yummy. Now, with this, you can make this for a fancy meal, or you can make it as an everyday fare. You can put some nice little new potatoes with it, or you can have some nice angel hair pasta, whole wheat kamut, or spelt pasta, or you can add it with brown rice or wild rice. And it's absolutely scrumptious, and it's just something different to do with chicken if you're just used to the regular old baked chicken or barbecue chicken. So you liked it, and your parents liked it, and we have it on occasion.
It is absolutely delicious. And I guess when I watch you like a wizard behind the counter here and doing your thing, it's just something else. So the rate that you can do the work and the speed at which you do it is incredible. So I'm thinking macronutrients. That's what I think in my head when I logically assemble in my mind what it is that I'm about to eat. So I think about protein, carbs, and fat. Now, usually when you eat an animal protein, the resident in the flesh is the fat. That's part of the meal. So you got to be careful what else you add to the meal, like sauces and creams. That's where a lot of fat can be. We always have a salad, and the fat that we use is a living oil, an omega-3 rich oil, or an extra virgin olive oil. So the oils have got to be living, they've got to be enzyme rich, they've got to have all of the goodies that come from the plant of which they were derived, as in the olive or the seed. So thinking in terms of macronutrients again, the protein quality, is it denatured? Is it overcooked? If you overcook a protein, you completely ruin it. It becomes a disadvantage to consume when it's overcooked and damaged and denatured. And then, of course, you add the carbs to the meal. So protein, fats, and carbs kind of balance it out. Do you need those heavy, dense carbs? Do you need that starch? Did you just go for a run? Or is it early in the morning? Or is it late at night? Carbs are an option. You don't have to put the carbs in. We often will have a very light salad. For example, you can have an evening meal with a nice quality lean protein and a light salad to accompany it. That's satisfying. It's not over deep in terms of starch content, and it's not going to fatten you up while you sleep. Because remember, if you over exceed your threshold or tolerance for carbs, you're going to get in trouble. So it should taste good. Obviously, food is assembled to satisfy our taste buds. But more importantly, it should be clean and lean and healthy to make us strong.
And I think that everyone knows that we want to use the highest quality products that we can find. And, you know, it's really funny because they have these cooking shows on TV, which I quite like to watch. But, you know, I'll tell you, they've got this one, it's on Fit TV, and it's all about healthy cooking. Now, I watch these shows, and I just jump up and down. I want to pull my hair out because they're using everything low fat, low fat, low fat, but they're using white milk, white oils, white sugar, white flour. And I'm going crazy because this isn't healthful. And one day I'm going to do a TV show with healthy cooking. And it's not about nobody's got time. I don't have time to cook. Well, the point is you do have time to cook. Get your hands in there. Get your hands into the food. Massage the food. Work the food. Use the food because the food is your medicine. And I think if you really get into it and see how much fun it is to cook yourself, you can make yourself healthy and well. And believe me, it's not just the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. It's the opposite. It's the Costanza principle. The way to a woman's heart is through her stomach because women love to eat. And it's really great when you can eat something and you know it's doing you good. It's healthful. Now, not all health food, like let's say date squares or cookies that I make or the crumbles, are diet food. But this isn't the point. Why would I want to make date squares because I'm on a diet? It's because I want a special treat. But I want this treat to not do damage to my body. So I add the best quality ingredients I can find, and I have one date square, and I'm a happy camper. So we need to understand what we're doing when we're cooking. We're cooking for health, and also it is a pleasure to the palate.
Right on. I used to work at a hotel many, many years ago, actually, on the island of Maui, and I learned that the chef is the head honcho, maybe second to the CEO or the owner of the place or the manager. But these chefs rate really high on the scale of position. And I also discovered that although they know a lot about the culinary skills, their nutrition science knowledge, I was not impressed with, because they whip up a lot of stuff that I would never eat, not in a million years. And of course, it looks good and it tastes good, but what I know about nutrition science and chemistry and the biochemistry of food, I know that it would wreak havoc on my immune system. And I think that this is what gets people into a lot of trouble. They use their eyes and their sense of taste as the rudder to guide their ship, and they do not understand the science. And so this is what we need, more education. What is the point of eating if it's going to ruin you, fatten you up, cause heart disease? Food can look good and taste good, but it must sustain our biological requirements and keep us well and healthy. And it can, and it always has until recently. Okay, great stuff. Let's move on now. Tracy, who was our last month's special guest?
Well, last month's special guest was Sally Fallon. Now, this is what's very interesting when I watch these shows on TV about no fat, low fat. Sally spoke on high-fat diets and not to be afraid of fat as long as the source was reliable.
Exactly, and what the science proves out is that without the fat, you get no vitamin A, no vitamin D, no vitamin K. The essential fatty acids are not present. So we're talking about animal fat. We're talking about butter and cream and milk. But the caution to the wind is that the dairy products must be raw. Now, she turned me on to realmilk.com, and of course, Ronald Schmidt and other experts in nutrition have brought this to my attention decades ago, and we continue to learn. But the very best way to consume dairy is raw, and everything that we have been told about raw milk being dangerous is absolutely false. You go to realmilk.com and you'll find out why they do not recommend that we drink milk unless, number one, it's raw, number two, it's whole, not skim, but whole, and number three, from grass-fed healthy animals. Now that's the key, because we are what we eat eats, and if the animals aren't well and fed correctly, according to their biology, according to their genetics, they're going to get into trouble. It's going to foul up what they produce, and we're focusing on milk products right now. But this goes to eggs and of course, all the dairy products, the cheeses and the yogurts and the cottage cheese. So don't be afraid of fat, but be afraid of what they are doing to the dairy products. And I would say as a general rule that we need to avoid the dairy because of how they've been altered and chemically damaged and irradiated. You know, like ultimately the food supply is so compromised now that we have to be very, very careful about what we consume and not take it and any of the stuff that we have for granted. So quality control is enormous, but what is done to the food prior to us getting it is as important to our health as what we do to it and how we prepare it and ultimately consume it. So the Weston A. Price Foundation, that's what Sally spoke on, that's what she represents, and I recommend that you go to the site and read some of that literature and find out about the ancestral diet, the original diet, the diet that makes sense, the diet that everyone used to consume at one time. Because remember, nobody on this planet started off, in terms of our species, on refined food. That is what's getting us into trouble. And so the key is to get that message across to people. We need to eat whole food, real food, natural food, and food that's compatible with our genome. Okay, let's move on to our next topic, our CHI Highway to Health update. And take it away, Tracy.
Well, let's see. What have we been doing? Corey's been throwing the hammer at the University of Hawaii, which is interesting. They have the nicest track that I've ever seen in my life. It's a rainbow track, and boy, I would love to run on that baby. It's beautiful, absolutely the nicest track ever. And while he's doing that, I'm doing walking lunges. And the next morning, the old girl's waking up, and I'm feeling it in all the right places. I just want you to know that.
A walking lunge, for those of you who don't know, is basically you're standing up with your feet together, and you take a great big step forward, and you dip down until the knee is forward, and the other knee comes down almost to the ground. And I'm talking about really good muscle contraction and stretching here, but involvement of pretty much the entire lower extremity and squeezing that butt. So you're expending energy and your cardio is going up and basically trying to maintain your posture, because as you come down, there's a tendency to lean forward, and what you want to do is lean backwards. So this is excellent for the spine and spine flexibility and motor control and balance. But you walk around like this. Some people call them duck walks, or just a basic lunge, forward lunge. And then you switch to the other foot, and then you just walk around the track in the heat of the sun, and that is an incredible workout. So I think that this is a very simple exercise that a lot of women can do with a lot of great benefits. The energy expenditure is great. The muscle involvement is great. And then you tie this in with maybe some sprints or some running and, of course, your weight training in the gym. But this is really, really good stuff. Okay, now we have a topic in mind that is always close to our hearts, because we're in the service industry. When you have an institute and you've got clients and you've got students and you've got members, it does come down to service. The success of your business depends to a large degree on the product that you provide and the service that you sustain your clients, customers, patients with. No matter if you're a physician or you sell cameras in a store or you work retail. So we're always on the lookout for great service, and we always like to comment on the type of service that we experience. But recently here in Hawaii, we have had some unusual experiences, which are not just common to Hawaii, but also common to the United States and to Canada. And we would like to comment on some of them, because I'm telling you that good service is discovered by not having any. That's when you know what good service is, when you experience lousy service, or what we call service that sucks. And everybody walks out of a store, a retail experience, a gym, a clothing store, and either in their mind or to their friend, they will talk about the service that they just experienced. And it's going to be either good or bad. And when it's bad, they're going to tell a lot of people. So we want to tell you about some of the experiences that we've had here. For those of you that work in the service industry, and if you work with people, you're working in the service industry. I don't care on what level, but when you talk to people and interact with people, there is a degree of service that's going on. And I think that what makes good business sense is to provide great service to everyone, everywhere, at all times. So, Trace, let's talk about our first experience.
Well, we were in a store, and we were at the seafood counter because I wanted to buy some nice fresh prawns and some ahi tuna. So there was nobody around, but I did see in the back there was three people working there, but they were talking. And they looked over at me and Corey, and nothing happened. And we must have waited. Well, it always seems like forever, but I think it was about 4 minutes that we stood there and waited. And then more people started to come to the counter because they wanted service as well. And then the woman looked over at me. She says, I'll be right with you. So we waited another 3 or 4 minutes. And this time, I'm just really getting a little bit ticked off. I was getting a little bit frustrated. And so I flagged them. I said, excuse me. So another 2 minutes later, and we must have been there for a total of about 8 to 10 minutes waiting. And meanwhile, there's like 4 or 5 people waiting in line to be serviced at the seafood counter. So this fellow comes over, and he serves us reluctantly. And Corey, I was really kind of wanting to be bitchy, but I thought, no. And so Corey says, so, were you having a meeting? And the fellow says, yeah, well, we were having a meeting. And then the fellow, I told him what I wanted, and then he proceeded to get it for me, and then Corey carried on a conversation with him and says, oh, so were you having a meeting with someone? And he says, yes, I was having a meeting with the big cheese. The big cheese is here today. Corey says, oh, so what were you talking about? He says, we're talking about servicing customers. Well, isn't that hilarious? They're talking about servicing customers with the big cheese. Meanwhile, we're standing in line waiting for at least 8 to 10 minutes to get serviced while they're talking about servicing the customer. And I said to Corey, we have to talk about this in SNU.
Yeah, it was amazing. Actually, I thought it was quite humorous because I looked at the group in the back listening to this guy, and they all knew that we were there waiting, and he's giving them a spiel about customer service, and all of them are all missing the entire point. Now, when you've got a live customer on the line, when you've got a live customer right in front of you, that's who you've got to focus on, not the guy on the phone. You need to be polite. You need to be multi-dimensional in your awareness and knowledge when it comes to retail. But one of those persons in that meeting should have been directed by the leader, who should have kept his eye on the counter, because you do not forsake your customer. As I learned a long time ago in retail, sales come from the customers. We used to have this little chart up on the wall. This manager that I used to work with many, many years ago put it up on the wall. Your paycheck comes from the customer. Without the customer, there is no paycheck. So if you come to work and there's absolutely no members in the gym, there are no customers in your store, you will close the store down because you cannot pay the rent. You have to take care of your customers, and you must ensure that they are pleased and that they are happy, with this one caveat, this one exception to the rule theme, that the customer is not always right. And there are times, and maybe we'll talk about that at another time, when you literally have to get rid of that customer, that one bad egg, that one rotten apple who will ruin the experience of retail or customer service for you. So anyway, we're just talking about being neglected, and I think that this is not the kind of service that we really thought was ideal. Okay, let's move on now to a vitamin store experience.
Right, okay, so we go into this vitamin store, and this particular product that we wanted was way up high on a shelf, like so high, like they had a lot of the products up high that you needed a ladder, literally a ladder on wheels to get it. Now, I guess if you were an elderly person, you'd have to go over to the counter and ask the sales clerk if you could get them to do it for you. But at this particular time, the sales counter, there was two people at the counter, and they were busy servicing someone, like bringing up their products. And Corey and I just looked at each other and just said, this is just way too much hassle for us to get this product, because we had to go to the other end of the store. Now, this is a big health food store. We had to go to the other end of the store and wheel this ladder to get our product. And I was just like, this is absolutely ridiculous. And we said, we got to talk about this on SNU.
Yeah, so make it easy for your customers to be served. For example, let's say that I'm sitting on a piece of gym equipment in the gym. Now, I may not know this, but someone else might be waiting to use that piece of equipment, but they might be intimidated. This is very common. And unless I move my big fat butt off that machine and get away from it while I'm breathing and resting between the sets, they're not going to come in and say, do you mind if I use the piece of equipment while you're resting? No, what they will do is maybe move on or not even end up using that piece of machine. So the same thing is true in retail. If it's difficult for me and it's not set up for my pleasure and my ease, and if I'm being neglected by the retailers, the staff in the store, then basically here's what happens. You lose the sale. And losing the sale is absolutely not what you want to do in a retail experience. You need the sale. You need to engage with the customer. And so I think this is just absolutely bizarre. How many retailers do not understand this simple, basic rule? Okay, so let's move on to the next experience.
Well, we go into this particular store maybe once every 2 weeks, once every 10 days. And the funny thing is one time this gal will be as nice as pie. And the next experience you go in, she'll look right at you and she'll just turn her head and not even say hello. I really believe that you need to have consistency when you are working with the public. I do remember when I was a professional dancer teaching dancing, not every day did I feel like putting on my makeup, doing my hair, and being nice face to face with somebody and letting them have a good experience. But my manager of the studio said to me, you leave your problems at the bottom of the stairs and you pick them up on the way out. We need to be consistent all the time because that person is paying for me to be consistent. One day I can't be a bitch and the next day I be super nice. It doesn't matter. I need to be consistent in my behavior. And this gal was not consistent in her behavior. It's like she looked at us like we weren't even there.
Yeah, and ultimately that doesn't make us feel very good, and humans are emotional and it's all about emotions, and if you ask people why they don't go back, it's because of how they feel. Okay? Now, another experience we're going to call the rip-off reward system. Okay, there's this one vitamin store here on the island where if you buy so much product, you get a point per dollar spent, and at the end of the year, it adds up to a certain amount of points, and then you get a discount. In this case, we had earned enough points to get a $25 discount. So we go in the new year to get our discount. We kind of anticipate that because someone prior to us coming in had said, you know, come back for your discount in the new year. Great. Okay, so we bought some extra products. Now, what we normally find is that when we buy their spiff or their in-house brand, we get a 10% discount. Okay, so we look at our bill, and then there's a 10% discount taken off those products. And at the end, at the bottom of the bill, you can see the amount that you saved and the amount that you paid. So when we went in to cash in on our reward that we had earned by spending, they didn't take the 10% off. So in other words, let's say that I bought $80 worth of stuff, you take 10% off, and then you're left with an amount, and then you subtract the $25. No, in this case, the 10% doesn't apply now. So in actual fact, we really haven't saved that much, and we were kind of misled. And again, how do we feel after the experience? We feel like we were ripped off and taken advantage of and lied to. And plus, one person said it was $50, the other person was $25. These amounts are not really the issue. The issue is how we feel and what our experience was. And ultimately, we came out of that store and we said, you know, maybe we should go to that other store in that other place, and maybe they don't have the same products, but you know what? They treat us better. And every time we go into this one store, it's just a negative experience. And so it doesn't really have anything to do with the fact that we're in America or the state of Hawaii, because we can find this experience anywhere on the planet. And we can also find the opposite here in Hawaii. We can find amazing, incredibly good experience.
And I think what it boils down to is you don't have to lower your prices just so people will come in. I think that people will come in even if you charge a little more than the guy down the street, but if you knock their socks off with service, make them feel comfortable, recognize them by name if you know them, make their shopping experience something that they want to tell their friends about. Because in this day and age, it's really tough to find good service. It really, really is. Now, another pet peeve that Corey has is about the double doors. Do you want to tell about the double doors?
Yeah. Oh, man, I hate this one. The double doors. Okay, you go into or you step towards an entrance of a retail store. In this case, I had been shopping and I was hungry, so I wanted to go to this outlet that serves fresh juices and makes protein shakes. And so I walk towards the entrance, and it's got double doors. They're glass doors. And one person was coming out the left side. And, of course, in America, we drive on the right side. We walk on the right side of the sidewalk. And we also walk into an entrance, and we use the right side. Okay, so I went to pull the door, and, of course, it's locked. And I just absolutely hate that. And I remember someone at a retail sales seminar saying on the platform, what are they trying to do? Keep the customers out on purpose? So literally, you go and grab the door and it won't open. So they're trying to keep me out. I can't stand this. You wouldn't believe how it irks me. So don't lock the doors when your doors are supposed to be open. Keep them open. Make it easy for customers to come in, to enter and to exit. It's all about them. It's not about you. It's about them. Because again, let's be reminded about who ultimately is paying the bills. Okay, so one more final comment.
Okay, we go to the gym, and at the entrance, in order to confirm your membership, you have to have it scanned. So on time and time again, at this one gym that we go to, you've got two people at the front desk, and they're talking on the phone, or they're both looking at some kind of game or something, or talking about their weekend. They don't even look at us. They just put their hand out. You give them their card, and then they scan it. They don't say hello. They don't say goodbye. They don't get eye contact with you, nothing. And, you know, I don't know what that is, because they're just employees, and they work there, and they're probably just getting minimum wage. They just don't care. And it's super unfortunate that the management isn't there to keep an eye on them. And it's unfortunate that the management would have to keep an eye on them as well, because these people are not self-motivated. Now, this has happened time and time again. This is just not a one-shot deal here. This goes on quite a bit.
Yeah, and I hold the management absolutely responsible, because although the individual that's employed is still responsible for their behavior, they don't have to be there. And the fact that they've been hired and are able to manage me that way comes from the top, because any good manager is going to keep an eye on the people that he's hired and ensure that they're doing the job that he wants them to do. So ultimately, the manager is under the CEO and the owner, and so ultimately I hold the guy at the top, the woman at the top, responsible for everything that I'm going to experience in the store, because they're the ones that make the decisions. They're the ones that hire and fire the supervisors and the managers, and then ultimately it goes all the way down the line. Like it says, that saying, a fish stinks when it's rotting from the head down. Okay, so when people are coming in to a retail experience, it's absolutely fundamental to engage with them, to make them feel wonderful, to greet them with a nice smile and talk to them. Not about product necessarily. If they walk into a vitamin store or a gym, it's not about selling. It's about them. Who are they? What are they doing? Where are they from? What's on their mind? What do they think is important? Have a meaningful discussion with people, and I guarantee that if you know anything about your product and you're involved with your product, that ultimately the product will come up in the comfort of the discussion that you're having about their life, their family, their kids, their trip, their training, whatever it is. Get your mind off selling and get your head inside the mind of the customer. And that is where the gold mine of the experience of sales will come from. Okay, so we're going to wrap up on that very positive note. And we're going to let Tracy have her final word.
My final word is by John Kenneth Galbraith. More die in the United States of too much food than too little.